to be able to spend a whole sort of morning, really, or part of a morning, talking in detail about the work that we're doing in Africa, because it really is a really important, and I also believe a really God-owned and God-inspired work that we are involved in. And, you know, we're not a big church. I mean, look, you look at the size of the church we are, but, you know, the work and the opportunity that we have to make a massive, massive difference out in Africa is amazing. It's really profound. And so I would never want any of us to think that, you know, because we're not a massive church, we can't have a massive impact, because I want to squash that right from the beginning, because we absolutely can make a difference. And I hope you'll see over the next few minutes, you know, what the kind of difference that we really can make. So we went out a couple of weeks ago, and we had really four main objectives to achieve while we were out there. We wanted to see how Evans was getting on with his house build. We wanted to move the School for Kids project forward. I'll say more about all of these things as we move on. There was a conference that was taking place, the Ministry of the Path of Life Ministry Conference. And there was also some elders that we were going to be setting in as well at the end of the week. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of give a brief, fast, sweeping overview of the week. And then I'm going to hand over to Dave, who will go into a little bit more detail about some of the aspects that I've covered briefly. And then Dave will hand back over to me, where I'll show you a little bit of where we're at in terms of the website for School for Kids. So just in case you can't remember, and you've seen a slide like this last time when I went to Africa, I get so many people say, oh, you know, where did you go? Where is Zambia? Where about in Africa? And I try to explain, you know, draw a picture in the air with my fingers and try to point to it. But, you know, here we are. This is Zambia. And there's Zambia in terms of the perspective of Africa. So it's quite a way down, sort of in the middle, but low down. And roughly. So we are just off the map there, unfortunately. So that's the very bottom of England, okay? In fact, that little yellow dot there is probably Bristol, okay? That little yellow dot is where we live. It's where we are right this moment now, okay? And we had to go all the way down here. I think I moved this picture. I forgot to move the red arc. There's Zambia. And that's a big picture of Zambia. Lots of people ask me, well, what other countries are around Zambia? You know, a lot of people haven't heard of Zambia, which is quite amazing, really. Well, they have no feel for where Zambia is. Zimbabwe is probably a bit more well known because of President Mugabe. You know, so that tends to be in the news a lot. And there's Mozambique, there's the Congo and Angola. So, you know, those are the kind of the countries that are around Zambia. And this is where we flew into Lusaka. And when we went in April and we spent time with Evans, we went all the way up there to Solwezi. Solwezi is, you know, about 400 miles away, which Google reckons you could do in 7.5 hours. Ha 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 ha. Like, Google have never obviously travelled on an African road ever, because I can assure you, you would never do Lusaka to Solwezi in 7.5 hours. It really takes a day. So that's where we were. And so let's go through what we tried to do. First of all, it was really important that we found out how Evans was doing with his house. As I said, Dave will say a lot more about this, but Evans has recently moved out.
Can you explain who Evans is?
Oh, of course, yes. Sorry for that, yes. So Evans Louis is a senior pastor in Africa. He runs the Path of Life Ministries, which is a group of churches in Zambia. He works with a number of other Christian elders and pastors and in churches, many churches in Solwezi, and more recently he's also overseeing some churches in Lusaka. And we've had a relationship with Evans Louis for quite a number of years, and so, you know, part of the trip really was to go out and spend time with Evans and help him in terms of moving out of his rented accommodation and moving in to accommodation that he was having built Okay, so that's heaven. So yeah, thank you for that. Do interrupt me if you have any questions. You know, this isn't a kind of a formal preach, although you know there's no harm in interrupting a formal preach either, just for the record. But I'm really happy if you want to ask me questions at any point. This is absolutely fine. So that's Evans, and there's Dave, and they spent at least a good 2 hours, I think it was, at least, going through all the nitty-gritty of what Evans needed to do in order to complete his house. And this is a really important project. I'm not going to say much more because I'll end up stealing Dave's thunder on that one, I'm sure. But so that was that. And John and I, we disappeared for a couple of hours and looked at some lions and things. So that was kind of interesting. So Dave will say a lot more about Evans and his house. The second objective, which particularly for me, this is something I really, really wanted to help us move forward on, was the School for Kids project. Now, again, if you've not heard of School for Kids is a child sponsorship program. You may not be aware, but you have to pay, parents have to pay for their children to go to school. In English terms, it's not a great deal of money. I think Dave probably has some of the figures, but in terms of the percentage of their salary, it's quite considerable. And many parents simply cannot afford to send their children to school, so they don't go. Equally, there are many, many children who are orphaned or even doubly orphaned. You know, they've lost both of their parents, and so they'll stay with other relatives or other guardians. And again, though, because it's very hard for these people to send their children to school because they don't have the money, they may be able to send their own children to school, but they don't have the money to send these orphaned children to school, so they'll often stay at home. The consequence of that is that, you know, they end up with just no schooling, so they're not really equipped then to, you know, to get good jobs or anything like that. So even worse, you know, often these children are forced into illegal marriages, even right down to the age of 12 years of age. Now, so it's not a legal age where you can actually get married in Zambia, but nevertheless, they're kind of forced into these relationships, you know, in order to survive and to get money. So it's a very, very sad affair, really. And what School for Kids is aimed to do, and this is a project that, you know, us, the church here, is setting up, is, you know, our aim is to encourage sponsorship both within the church but also, if possible, as much as we can outside of the church through friends, family, work colleagues, anybody really, whereby for £20 a month, just £20 a month, you can put a child who ordinarily would not go to school, you put a child right the way through to school, so for £20 a month for, you know, the duration of that time at school, and that would just make almost indescribable difference to that child's life. So we've been in the process of setting that project up. You know, we've had the vision for it, we've had the ideas. You know, one of the real blessings is when we sat down with Evans and we talked about it. So here are some of the children. We have 50 children now. Evans has identified 50 children who are already, you know, want to attend this school, and their goal is to get that school set up by January, up and running with teachers and resources and everything, and all the children. In fact, Evan said he would love, you know, why can't I send 70 children? You know, I could easily find 70 children to put into that school. But we've tried to rein it in just initially because we feel it's important to kind of get this thing off the ground and working and functioning before we grow it too quickly. But that was a real blessing to see. That actually moving forward, just actually, you know, see pictures of some of the children that were going to be attending that school. Again, Dave will say some more. They've got a video that he wants to show us. This is just to try and help us to understand that, you know, when I say that parents can't afford to send their children to school, they really, really can't. Poverty is dreadful in Africa. And I wish I'd take more pictures because we, you know, every day we were driving past, you know, sort of these sort of shacks, really, where people either work or live, and you know, it is absolutely appalling. You can't see that view. I just quickly took it through the window. I thought, oh, I should take a picture of that, and you know, kind of come and gone This is one we took. I took earlier in the week. You know, they're just very basic. You know, where they work. This isn't my picture. I just took this off the internet, but it is Lusaka. You can start to see, you know, the kinds of conditions. They truly, 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 truly live in poverty. You know, we might say to ourselves, "Oh, I'm really feel a bit hard up this, you know, this week. I'm starving." Have you ever said you're starving? Have you ever said that? You're not. Believe you me, you're not starving. When they say they're starving, they probably really are. When they say they're poor, they probably really are. You know, there's a big, big difference between what they experience and what we in the Western world experience. You know, poverty is truly quite remarkable. And so it's great that we're able to do something very practical to help these children get, you know, have a life in Africa. I said I'd move on quite quickly. This is the third thing that we were involved in. A conference. We didn't know we were going to have a conference. I know, are you smiling there? One thing you have to get used to when you go to Africa is you have to get used to Africa time. And you have to get used to the Africa time keeping, which really is non-existent. You know, anybody who knows me personally, knows me well, will know that, you know, I'm generally very punctual, and I like people to be punctual when interacting with me. It really bugs me if people say they're going to get to me at a particular time and then don't, you know. And I have to kind of, you know, sort of, you know, come to terms with that. When you go to Africa, you know, they say, "Oh, well, I'll see you at 9 o'clock. 11:30, you probably easily could still be waiting." And you think, how could that possibly be? But it really, really is like that, you know. This was 15 minutes after the start of the meeting. And there was still nobody there. They were still setting up, you know, but it was 15 minutes after the start of the meeting. This is what it was like every single morning. It's just amazing. I mean, I was really quite cool about it because this is not my first time in Africa. So I now go out with a complete understanding and resignation, really, in terms of what it's actually going to be like there in terms of keeping to time, which we just know they're not going to. So there we are. We didn't even know we were going to be doing a conference. In fact, we'd kind of expressed a desire not to. We want to. John and I, we go out in April. Went out this April this year. We'll be going out again next year, similar sort of time, where we do a 3 or 4 day conference with the church leaders, which are part of Path of Life Ministries. And we didn't particularly want to be doing 2 conferences. A year, but nevertheless, communication is another interesting challenge when working with people in Africa. So you might say something and they hear something completely different, or somehow they don't quite, you know, grasp what it is that you're saying. So even though we said we only really want to do 1 conference, they'd arranged a conference. So literally about a week and a half, 2 weeks before we're about to go, we found out that we were speaking at a 3-day conference. So we had to kind of get lots of material together, and but it was absolutely fine. In fact, we had a really fantastic time. Here we have, I tried to explain that they have no concept of tidiness in terms of cables and things. I mean, mind you, I look at this and think, well, you know, hey, what, who am I to say anything? But but this was quite amazing. I mean, this just sprawls everywhere, right across it. You know, anywhere you'd be forever tripping up and things, and they'll be setting up in the middle of the meeting, you know. So, you know, we were in the middle of the worship. Somebody rolls in with a piano under their arm, literally, you know. You know, walks right through the worship team, you know, just plonks the piano down and starts connecting, you know, all the noises you get when you plug cables in there. And then what made it even worse, they start, they press the keys down, you know, just to see if it's working. And it's not even any key, any note that's particularly part of the tune that you're singing. There's this random note called blaring out loud in the middle of the worship. And then when it's all set up, they'll just join in, you know. It's another world. It's just another world. And I'm thinking, poor Pete would be turning in his grave if he was trying to organise the PA out there. These guys here were professional singers. We love the suit. He had an even more flamboyant suit later in the week. But they're Christians. They're part of another church, not Path of Life. But We had great times of worship. I haven't got a video this time of the worship, but you know, if ever you go out to Africa, it's a great experience. From a teaching point of view, we had a great time. Amazing how it all came together. Thinking, what on earth is this young lad doing? Well, John was talking about the Robbie Dawkins book, and in that book there was a testimony of this girl who goes into a shop because God told this girl, I want you to go into this shop and do a handstand in front of the shopkeeper. And if you remember the story, you know, this shopkeeper who wasn't a Christian said, God, if you're real, you know, I want you to prove it by sending somebody in to do a handstand. That was his prayer, you know. And this girl, God spoke to this girl. And so, you know, John was telling this story. And another problem you have when you're preaching is translating strange concepts. And I knew straight away, as soon as John said handstand, you know, there's this kind of, you know, sort of blank look. And we know, what's a handstand? So you had to then try to explain a handstand. And if I had to thank God for anything, okay, this is probably the thing I had to thank God for the most. Because at the beginning of this meeting, before the meeting started, we made an agreement, or rather there was an agreement made on my behalf, that if nobody in the congregation could do a handstand, then I would have to do the handstand, aided, of course, by Dave, who would hold me upside down. So you could imagine my relief when a young lad came forward, said, I could do a handstand, and there he is. In fact, he could do more than a handstand. He walked across the floor like that, which was pretty remarkable. I certainly couldn't have done that, let alone do a, I don't think I could do a handstand either. So that was great. There I am. I was doing my preaching around the vine and the branches and bearing much fruit. I also did some talk about authority, and that's one of the elders. What's his name again? Robert, that's right, Robert. So that's one of the elders that of the Lusaka Church that we set in later in the week. And there's Dave. And Dave did his talk about Elijah and how Jezebel chased after Elijah and Elijah hid in the cave, and how things, sometimes you have your plans, but you know, things don't always go to plan. And I think in some respects a lot of the trip was like that. You know, we had ideas in mind, but it's always God that directs our paths. At the end of the week, so this was another surprise that was sprung on us just 2 weeks before we went out. So not only did we not know we were speaking at a conference, but as part of the conference, Pastor Evans Louis had also arranged for us to do a kind of an ordination service for the elders in the Lusaka Church. So, you know, he wanted us to pray over these elders. And you know, this isn't just sort of just part of a normal service, you know, right, we'll just pray for so and so now, you know, just in the course of a normal meeting. Now this was a big event. I was really quite surprised. You know, you see this table here, you know, with all the, you know, the tablecloths and then the flowers and the covered seats and things like this, and you know, we were placed in the positions of honour, you know, which is quite humbling, actually. You think, but actually, when you sit in places like this and they're honouring you, it is very humbling. But they invited, you know, they had the deputy commissioner for the, you know, for that area in Lusaka. They had a former ambassador to Libya and other, you know, important people. This is the way they do things, you know, out in Africa. Now you might think that's a really strange thing to do, you know, be like us, you know, if we're going to set in a new elder, you know, asking the Lord Mayor to come and join us in our meeting and some other people, you know, we probably perhaps wouldn't really do that, but it's part of the African culture. But it's quite exciting too, because it does show how much the church is linked into you know, a lot of the government departments. In fact, the deputy commissioner, he was a lovely, lovely man. He was clearly a Christian, and just, you know, just shared his heart, you know, for a moment, and then talked about a gift that they wanted to give to the church, you know, from the local government, which I thought was really wonderful. Here's John playing his role as X Factor judge. This is the choir. Actually, it just happened. They turned around at that moment in time. They were doing a worship song to everybody, and then Robert, the elder, got them to all turn around. So I took a photograph. I thought it looked quite funny there. You know, John sat there. But the worship was fantastic. Sorry?
They're all singing to you.
They're all singing to you, yes, absolutely. Of course they are. You may notice, incidentally, that John there is wearing a jacket, but there is not wearing a jacket. Neither of us really thought that it would be a cool idea to take jackets and ties and smart trousers and things with us to do this sort of ordination service. We just really cross our minds. So we all turn up there, and Evan just randomly says, "Oh, you know, you've got a suit, haven't you?" No. So one of the elders lent John the jacket, which was that one there. We really wanted him to wear the jacket of the worship leader, that nice flamboyant one. That's what we really wanted. This here is Joseph and his wife. So they are the senior elders of the Lusaka Church, and they work closely. Will continue to work closely with Evans Louis and under Evans governing authority. It's interesting, really, because he's a really quiet and humble man. In fact, if you were to meet all the elders of the Lusaka Church, I would say probably all of them, maybe with the exception of Anthony, who was our driver last time we went out. They're all really quite loud and dominant and forceful type people, you know, all the other elders. And he's very quiet and very unassuming. But God has chosen that man to lead and bring the authority in the church. I love the way God makes his choices, you know, like David, like God choosing David all over again, you know. And it's just great, you know, just, you know, the way we measure people and the way God measures people is always so different. What was a real surprise, I don't think we saw this one coming either, as part of the service, we had to wash feet. And there is John there, washing the feet of Joseph and his wife. And in fact, John did this for all of the elders that we set into place. And again, you might think, well, that's a weird thing to do. Well, of course, you know, in our culture, it is an incredibly weird thing to do. I suspect it's a fairly weird thing to do in African culture too, but it very much ties into what Jesus did when Jesus washed the feet of the disciples. You know, you read about it in the New Testament, and Peter, of course, Peter the disciple said, "Oh yeah, Jesus, you can't do that. It should be me washing your feet." But you know, Jesus sort of said, "No, you must let me do this, because unless you let me do this, then we can't really, you know, be part of each other." And this is really what we're doing here. It's a very humbling thing for everybody, but both for, you know, for Joseph and for John. But it's a real significance. It's a real indication of God's ownership and God's desire for us to humble ourselves before one another, as we become part of each other. We also took this time to formally appoint Evans Louis, as head of the Path of Life Ministries over the Solwezi churches, and also over the church in Lusaka. They've never actually been formally done, although they do recognise Evans as the leader of that. So, you know, John also prayed over Evans in terms of his role over the whole ministry. So that was it, really. I'm going to hand over to Dave in a moment. So as we left, Lusaka had to say goodbye to British Airways because we literally took the very last direct flight from Heathrow to Lusaka and back. So, you know, they British Airways now are not flying from Heathrow to Lusaka. So when we go next year, we're going to have to find a different way into Lusaka. But what's interesting is whenever an airline leaves Lusaka for the last time, they have a bit of a ceremony, and they got all these children out, and they were singing songs, which was lovely. And I took a picture of them. So they're on the runway. They're on the terrace just next to the plane. The plane is just behind us. And even more interesting is, I say that they gave us a good hose down. What happens is, as the airplane is taxiing, to the runway, the fire engines are either side of the plane, and they spray water on you. Very strange, I know, but apparently this is tradition for when a plane leaves for the last time, leaving Lusaka. I will leave you with what was the standing joke of the week. Can you guess which is Dave's case and Dave's toilet bag, and which is my case and which is my toilet bag? Bearing in mind, if you stay, stands up, bearing in mind, what Dave looks like and what I look like, I just found this kind of interesting. So I got a lot of stick all week for my little case and my little toilet bag, but it just shows you, you really can travel light for the week. Anyway, I'd like to hand over to Dave, really, to talk us through some of the more details of the building work and School for Kids.
I'm going to talk about a few things. Rich mentioned a few things. One thing he sort of skipped over was we had to work through a translator. And in itself, that's quite amusing because the number of words that we use, as Rich said, that they have no concept of. One of which was the word brief, which Rich used. Rich initially said brief, and the translation was about 20 seconds long. It just went on and on and on. And we were sat there thinking, he did say brief, didn't he? Just the irony that the translation was anything but brief. Okay, so I'm going to talk first of all on building Evans a home, which is what we're looking at doing over there. So just going to give you basically a little bit of the background about why we're doing this, the progress so far, and then what's next, what we're doing currently. So the background is that in December 2012, the leadership team met, and also the trustees, and we agreed to start supporting Senior Pastor Evans Louis and his family. And his family at that point were Evans and his wife and their four children, I think, at that point. I think they have five now. And we agreed to start supporting him. And that included £250 per month to pay for his rent on a pretty modest house in Sulwesi. The landlord then, knowing that Evans was good for his money, I believe, decided to increase the rent in April to £300 per month, and then again in July to £350 per month, and we could rapidly see where this was going. So the decision was taken just before that, actually, in April, that we would start to look at the possibility of building Evans a house. Not many Zambians own their own home, most rent, and the homes that they rent are, as Rich showed some of the photos, pretty shabby, to say the least. So in May we agreed to support the build of a house. What Evans actually had done is he'd already himself funded the purchase of land and had bought the plot and had also built some foundations on that plot. What then happened is the rains came, or some rains were there, and they washed most of those foundations away. So it was important that it was done properly. So we agreed to fund approximately £20,000 over 2 years in regular payments, making sure that work was actually being done. You can imagine, if you don't earn much, if we sent them a cheque for £20,000 and said build a house, it would be just overwhelming for him, really. It's like somebody giving you a cheque, you're saying I need a new washing machine, and somebody saying, here goes £2 million, off you go, buy the best one out there. You would really just have no idea where to start. Okay, so progress so far. Okay, we were advised by Evans that £10,000 would be enough for Evans to build the house sufficiently for him to be able to move in. Okay, that would mean that we stopped paying rent on his other little home. And so we originally agreed to send £3,000, wait for him to build, send another three, and then another four. But what Evans did is he came back and he told us about the rainy season, which kicks in at the end of October, really. And so he said, look, if you can give me £10,000 before that point, I can move in, it'll be safe, and we'll be okay. So we agreed to send out £6,000 in July, and then Evan sent us loads of photographs showing what he'd done, and you will see some of these in a bit. And then we sent a further £4,000 in August. And then he went away and he used that money wisely as well. Okay, so that's Evan's home as it currently stands. You'll see a few things about it. One, it's got a metal roof. With the side of getting extremely hot in the summer, it's also extremely noisy when it rains. And you'll see the distinct lack of windows in the property. You'll see where they're supposed to be, but they just brick them up because the money we sent them so far is not enough to pay for the windows or doors or floor or ceiling or any water, sewerage. In fact, what you see there is pretty much what he has. And he built that in 2 months. So they really do. When you send them the money, Evans is not somebody who drags his heels. He cracks on with it straight away. So whilst we were there, Evans, incidentally, moved in September 2013 to that home with his family, including a little baby. And he lives there, and he is extremely happy and proud of his home. So the windows are bricked up, as I mentioned. The floor inside is dirt. There's no ceilings. You can see there's huge gaps under here. And in the door, obviously, is a very big gap. And what that means is the mosquitoes come in. He said inside they sleep under mosquito nets. And because the windows are blocked up, it's also pitch black inside, so you can't see anything in the day or at night. And they currently have no power there either. So there's no power, no light, no water or drainage. The photos at the very end of the film, you saw there was one with a hole. That's their well that they've dug just outside, and they go with a bucket and they collect that. And then the Wonder One, which looked like a little bike storage shed, that's their outside facilities, which is another hole. Which I did ask, and it is worryingly close to the well, but that's what they use. And I said, look, you know, how does that feel? And he said, oh, that's fine, that's what we used to, we're happy, that's traditional Zambian loo, and we're happy with that, that's not our priority. So what I did was I sat down with him, and we basically, that's what Evan said, actually. He said, this is God's grace to me. It's a great blessing to own my own home. And the local community and the local church leaders see Evans with his home, and they're asking him, what's different about you? And it's a massive testimony. He's able to talk to the community and explain an outreach into that community, even though it looks as it does there. Okay, so what next? Okay, we left Evans with £5,000 whilst we were there. I have to say it's the hairiest thing I've ever done. I've never looked after my hand luggage so much as when we were flying out. It's pretty much kept it with me the whole way, known as £5,000 in cash in my bag. And then driving around the whole week, we had it there. And that's to pay for specific things. And what I did is I went through, and Evans gave me a complete breakdown of everything he'd spent so far and everything he needed to spend going forwards. And I was quite impressed. You know, it's my day job here in the UK. It's project managing development. But the phrases Evans used, some of my colleagues probably wouldn't use. So Evans is talking about sole plates, talking about foundations, purlings, like words that I use at work. Some of you are probably having no idea what I'm talking about even now. So he knows what he's doing when he's building. I was quite impressed, I have to say. It gave me a lot of confidence in him. So that money is to pay for brick pillars and wall plate gaps. So that is the pillars, the support. You see the canopy here. In a moment, there's a piece of bamboo holding that up. When the winds and the rains come, it's not going to be strong enough, so he's going to build brick pillars at either end to support that, and he's going to fill in all the gaps where the roof meets the top of the wall. External plastering, at the moment it's all brick. Unlike the bricks here, those bricks are made. They made them on site, and they built a little kiln, and they made all those bricks on site. What it means is because they are sort of clay bricks, with really driving rain, they deteriorate quite rapidly. So what they need to do is render all of that before the rains come. And he was quite concerned that that needed to happen quickly. Windows and front door, it's important that he can see when he's inside. Get rid of those bricks, get a front door, get some windows, and make the property secure and also free from the mosquitoes. One thing I did say that he needed to do also, which is £100, is to build some mosquito blinds. So I gave him a design to do that. So he can create screens to go inside the windows so that they can open the windows and still protect themselves internally. A generator, so he can see at night. At the moment, he literally has to go to, any time he goes anywhere, he charges everything. So every time he came to visit us, he popped to our hotel, and he was literally unplugging lamps in the lobby and plugging his laptop in, when we went, you can't quite see it in the picture of me sitting on the bench, but what you don't realise is they've got like lights in the trees surrounding the hotel. It's quite a sort of a nice hotel. Evan's unplugged these lights, plugged an extension lead in, then proceeded to plug his laptop in, a chargeable light, his mobile phone, and just everything he could bring with him. He literally started bringing stuff out of his bag like Mary Poppins and plugging it into all these plug sockets. I'm thinking, oh gosh. And so yeah, it was quite amusing. Even to the point of one, which wasn't the right plug, you know, he shoved a bit of stick in to get the plug to open and rammed the cables. Oh, just cringeworthy. So we're paying for a generator, okay? What he did ask for, and we're not paying for, is solar. Okay, and there's a reason for that, is once he's got a generator, he can then have light, okay? The power in Zambia, not just in Solwezi, everywhere, fluctuates massively. And if you test the voltage, it ranges anywhere from 250 volts to 180 volts, and it sort of goes up and down rapidly. So, you know, you can plug a kettle in one day, and it boils normal speed. You plug it in the next day, it's half an hour, because the voltage is all dropped, and it really just depends what anyone else is doing. So we're paying for a generator, and we're also paying for wiring inside the house. And this is quite critical because when we put the wiring in the house, it's completely reversed to the UK. You have to completely rewire your house, put all the plug sockets in, all the cabling. And when you do that, the electricity board will say, oh, somebody over there with cabling, we'll put some cables to their house now. But they won't put the cables to your house until you've completely wired your house and had it signed off. So the generators are tied them over in the meantime because it might take a year for them to do that. But the wiring will mean that they'll start putting poles and cables to him in that area. So 2 days after we returned, okay, we left him with this money, and we're saying, great, excellent, we trust that he's going to do this. 2 days after we returned, he posted this on Facebook. He literally drove back the sort of day back to Solwezi from where we left him, went straight into the bush with a 4x4 and bought sand. He literally cracked on as soon as he got back. So we don't have that massive concern that he's not going to do it. He is going to get on with this and make it somewhere better to live. So still outstanding is the floor slab or the concrete inside so that he actually has a floor to live in, not dirt. Plumbing and sewerage. This is the order that he's going to do these, incidentally, at some point. Ceilings. Solar, possibly. Internal doors. Internal plastering. And painting and floor tiles. And that's what he's still got to do going forward. But that will be some point next year. Okay, so that's the end of the house. Has anyone got any questions on the house?
Ventilation,
they are in the... let's even go back to it. Okay, all the little holes here, these are all air bricks. So they will have to be filled in as well with special air bricks. With mosquito screens built in some. Yeah, that's generally the ventilation, and the windows, of course, as well. Let's go through everything. It's very it's in a rural location. He's living there, and he's also got neighbours that look after it for him as well. So when he was building it and wasn't living there, the neighbours were on it. It is, I think, from what I've gathered from Rich and John, pretty in the middle of nowhere. It's not like Lusaka, from what I can gather, where crime, you know, you really, literally wouldn't leave anything. When I've been in Lusaka before, they've jumped electric fences to nick manhole covers. They've gone into electric boxes and pulled the main fuses out to nick those whilst it was live. And anything that's not screwed down and anything that is screwed down, they steal because they're so desperate for money. In some ways, it's much more rural, and the crime's not as much, so it is quite safe, yeah. He isn't, however, planting. Originally, he was planting maize, which grows sort of so high. What he is planting now is cabbages and much low-level vegetables so that people can't hide in the maize around his house. It's just safe for him and his kids and things as well. It's interesting in the song, it talks about two cats. It's more like two lions, but in the garden. But, yeah, anything else? Nope. Okay. So next thing I want to talk about is school for kids. And to give you some of the background on that also, and why this is so really important. I think a lot of us thought it was good, but when we were there, we really kind of understood a bit more about why it's important as well. So School for Kids and Beacon of Hope Community School, which is in Solwezi, in the north of Zambia. Okay, so Rich already mentioned that Zambia is right in the sort of sub-Saharan part of Africa, and Solwezi is right at the north of Zambia. Okay, so there's very few state school places, which mentioned that, and they cost 165,000 Zambian kwacha. It got very confusing while we were there because they've changed the currency and they've taken all the zeros off. So at one point in the conference, somebody said they were going to give 1 million kwacha to the church, and everyone looked and went, does he mean 1 million? Does he mean 1,000? And it was 1,000. There are 8,500 old kwacha to the pound. Okay, so 165,000 is £20 a month, which doesn't seem a lot to us. Most schools there are private, and they cost £65 a month. To put it into perspective, the average Zambian family has got 6 children. As Rich mentioned, that's of their own kids. However, if, say, for instance, your sister and her husband have died, you're then also taking their 6 kids, so you may have 12 kids. And then your wife or your husband may also die, so you'll have a single parent family with 12 kids. The cost of state education just for the average family with 6 kids is therefore £120 a month. A maths teacher earns £230 a month, in reality. Now, you consider going back to what I said about the cost of renting a property for Evans, you can see why it's such a massive issue. The cost of rent is £200 to £350. The cost of school is £120, but you only earn £230. It's a massive issue. I got a big report, which was, I can email it to you if you're interested in statistics. I loved it. But it lists the whole demographic of Zambia. It's about 200 pages long, and it looks at everything from education to their preferred use of contraceptive. It really is quite detailed. But I put, as somebody did stats, I really love it. So I pulled out these figures. So 40% of Zambian children are orphans. Okay, that means they've lost one parent. 15% of Zambian children are double orphans. They've lost both their parents. 26% of adults are HIV positive. And whilst officially they get free treatment, the reality is you only get free treatment if the doctor have the treatment to give you in the first place, and that's the big issue. So what that means is that pupils completing primary education in the Solwezi area, got the male and female differences, 8.7% of kids finished primary education. Okay, not secondary, not get 5 A stars or whatever it is, 5 A to Cs, just finish primary education. Adults with no education are 16.5%, so it's a real issue. The repetition rate, 2.3%, that's quite interesting. That's how many people have to resit a year. You don't go up to the next year unless you passed the year before. If they're in education, they do really well. There's only 2.3 actually have to go back a year. These are some of the things that Ruth says. The median age at first birth increases with the level of education. What basically happens is, if you're not educated, you get pushed into marriage. And that's what Evans told us. Some of the girls that are going to go into school are 12 years old. They'll be in classes with 6 and 7-year-olds. So they've not been in school for a few years. And we said, well, what happens if they don't go into school, 12 years old? And Evans said, oh, they'll be married. And we said, what does that mean? They'll be married in the community. And Rich said, oh, what's the legal age for marriage? And Evan said, well, it's not legal. And I said, oh, so you mean they'll be sex trafficked? And he sort of like went, there was a bit of an uneasy silence. And he sort of went, well, yeah, that's the reality. And that's why the school is really important for some of these kids. Okay, women with no education have their first birth 6 years earlier than women who have attained a higher level of education. The average age for the first birth, average, okay, is 15. The school then, okay, so it's an age range 3 to 12 years. The 3 to 5-year-olds are going to be in school from 8 to 4:30, and that's because they can't send them home on their own, so they have to wait for the parents to finish work to come and collect them. And they'll be at one end of the building. Then you've got 6 to 12-year-olds at the other end, and they're there from 8 till 1 p.m. It's 50 children, and there's 25 boys and 25 girls. And as Rich already mentioned, Evans originally said he had 70 to 90 kids, and he had to whittle them down to the most needy. So kids like Francis, he's four, and you can see there, he lives in Highland Compound in Sulwesi. Both his parents have died, and he's looking forward to going to school and learning to read and write. And also you've got Tricia. Okay, Tricia's a little bit different. She's an albino. You'll see her hair there. Actually, if you look really close on that photo, she's actually got blonde hair. But they spiral bound her hair and dark hair to make her look as close to every other child as they can, because she's completely isolated in her community for being different. She lives with a single mum. Her dad died. And she's there. And they're typical of the kids in this school, really.
You know, I was looking at those pictures of the children, and I felt quite tearful, really, because, you know, they really do need help, and you really can save them from quite a dreadful future, really. But we really have an opportunity to help. You know, we're not presenting here, you know, something that's impossible to make a difference. You know, we have an opportunity, actually, to make a real difference, and not just us, but, you know, our friends and family, people we work with. You know, we can all be involved in this. What we have is we have the website. If you go to schoolforkids.org, school for kids, spelled like that, schoolforkids.org, this will take you to this website. It is almost complete. It's not totally complete. It all kind of works. We just need to put the remainder of all the children on there. But basically, you know, what you can do, the kind of things you'll see if you go there, you can't see that because I'm not on the internet at the moment, but that the video that you've just seen, the one that Dave's shown you, if you go to this page here, that video will be there, and people can watch and listen to the video on that web page. But typically what we want to do is get people to go away. Just go to there, which is where you have opportunity to sponsor the children. And what you'll have is, you know, we've got eight children on there at the moment. Scroll down a bit. But we're going to put all 50 children on there. And you might think, well, it's a bit like a cattle market. You know, it feels like that. But it is not an uncommon way to present these types of projects. And basically what you can do, you can see there's kind of one that will repeat. If you're thinking, where's the one I've got? And this is the local copy on my laptop. It's not the one that's on the internet, because Pete and Michelle have put their name down on that one. The system is live, so actually people could go on at this at the moment, but people don't typically know about it because we haven't broadcast it. But basically, you know, you'd go on to a child there. If I just do this, if I wanted to select Chica, and you get this. And you get the details about her. And then basically you can go down to the bottom there. There's the mouse. Hand gets in the way. There we go. And then you can sponsor the child. And basically you fill in all your details. And you hit, you know, submit. The details will then come to us. In fact, it will go to Pete. Pete is going to be managing all the Africa work, particularly the School for Kids work. He's going to be managing it for us on behalf of the church. And then we'll come offline, if you like, and we'll have personal contact with people, because we feel that, you know, it's this kind of thing, it's right to have proper people one-to-one contact, and we'll contact these people who want to sponsor. We'll get standing orders and things set up and get this whole thing moving. And the goal will be that, you know, January 1st, this thing will be live and money will be going into the school, supporting the children, supporting the teachers, and buying the resources. What can you do? Well, what Dave and I will aim to do, and I'm going to drop some arbitrary goals in place here. We haven't really talked about them, but I'd like to think that probably in no longer than 2 weeks we'll get all the children onto that website. Do you think that's feasible, Dave? Yeah. So by 2 weeks' time, you know, I think we can start advertising the existence of this website. I've prepared a kind of a template email. I'll send you details of where to get that, but you can download the text of an email from the website. And it just talks about the project and it has the link to the website. And you can send that. You can edit it, make it your own email, so it's personalized. And you can send that to friends and family, people you work with, anyone that you think would be moved to want to be part of this project and support the children. Of course, you may want to do this yourselves. You know, we don't want to discourage people in the church. Quite the opposite, really. We want to encourage people, you know, to be involved in this project. But really what we need now is we need to ramp up the sponsorship. You know, this project depends on money coming in to support the children. The church is prepared to completely underwrite this in the first year. So even if we get zero sponsors, we'll still go ahead and do this and get this thing off the ground. But it's not our heart that we completely underwrite this. It's our heart is that people will really feel moved in their own heart to choose a child or two even, you know, but certainly, you know, choose a child to support that. And what the sponsors will receive is, you know, they'll receive a picture of the child, information about the child, and you know, on maybe a quarterly or six-monthly basis, you know, they'll get updates on how that child is getting on at school, maybe updated photographs, and you know, all this stuff will keep online, so people can go on and they can, you know, they can go and they'll find information about their own child. You get an account on the website, and all the history about how that child is doing over the years at school will be there available, so you can see what your sponsorship is achieving for that child. So really, I leave that with you all to go away and pray about. I'll send an email, or Pete, one of us will send an email to you probably in just under 2 weeks to let you know it's all live and what to do, where to get the emails from, etc., etc. Pete's been generating posters. You can see some posters over there. You know, we can print posters for you if you want to put posters up at work. That helps to advertise it. All sorts of things that we can do. The key is really down to you now. You know, we've done all we can do, but this thing needs to go out through you, through the church, the grassroots, to yourselves and to people you know, to encourage people to help these children who would, you know, ordinarily have a dreadful future potentially, but you could change that for the glory of God. Amen.
We seriously just have a few minutes left, and I don't want to spend more than a few minutes just to bring this all to a conclusion, really. I wonder if you can put up for me Psalm 41, 1-3. It's going to be difficult. If not, don't worry. You know, there are just a number of issues about the poor, really, when it comes to how we think about them and our attitude towards the poor. One is that we really at heart don't care, and that, I think, touches the lives of many people. It doesn't come within my thinking. The second is that the problem's too big. You know, to make any changes or inroads at all, it's just not even worth bothering about. And the Africa problem of poverty is enormous. Or I care, but it's not my responsibility. That's another way of viewing it. Or I don't want to know. You know, I mean, the fact is you're sitting here this morning and you've had to sit through really not just the joys of going out to Africa, but some of the enormity. I mean, Richard, I have seen many, many times the level of poverty in Africa, and there's nothing that you see here that compares with that. Even if you went to the worst areas, even where we would be rubbing shoulders with our down and outs in our soup kitchens, nothing compared to these people are born into poverty. They live all their lives in poverty, and they are hopeless. And to be honest, it makes me angry, because when we look at things like terrorism and you know, the suicide bomber and the mentality, the mindsets that these young people have, they come out of poverty. They don't know anything else. So when they're told they go to heaven because they blow someone up, they believe it. They're looking for something different, something more beautiful, more wonderful. But they think, because they're deceived, that by acting violently in this way, it will help them. But that very action itself speaks enormously about the poverty, not just in Africa, places like Palestine and others, where children never know what it is to ever feel that they've eaten enough. They're hungry and starving every day. What we're doing is making a little bit of a difference. Have you found that one? Yeah, can you? Sorry, you've forgotten what it was. It's Psalm 41, 1-3. Yeah. So just to remind ourselves, really, Richard said that whatever happens, we would be trying to get this off the ground in January. But I want to say with all my heart, I don't want the church to run this. I would rather it come from outside the church. And this means that what I would really like you to think about is people that you know, relations, friends, colleagues, people at work, that you think that you can send an invitation, really, to the website, which has done a template for us, and that's really good. And it will help us to do that. And I know Lynn and I have quite a number of people that we're just waiting for the right moment that we can send this to. And for many of them, some of them, £20 a month is neither here nor there. It's just we haven't had the opportunity in the past. So I'd really, really like you to think about this. If we can raise 50 sponsors without it coming out of the church's funds, that would be really excellent. And I think it would be also, because if we just take it from the church, there's no effort on your part. You can just sit back and we can do it and it just comes out of our tithes and offerings. Okay, that's fine. But the issue really is, can you go beyond that and do something which involves a tiny bit of effort? And this is why I put this on the board. It says, blessed is he who considers the poor. Okay. And listen to what happens if you consider the poor. And this is really important. It said the Lord will deliver him in time of trouble. The Lord will preserve him and keep him alive, which is good news, and he will be blessed on the earth. You will not deliver him to the will of his enemies, so you're protected. The Lord will strengthen him on his bed of illness, so you're kept healthy, and he will sustain him on his sick bed. Now, those promises are linked to one thing, consideration of the poor. And if you ever do a study in the scriptures on the poor, you'll realize that the scriptures have a lot to say about not just the poor and how God's people should care for them, but also about injustice against the poor. Jesus said, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit. He talked about the poor all the way through his ministry. Even Judas used the poor as an excuse when Mary put the expensive ointment on Jesus and he got annoyed about it and he said, shouldn't we have sold this and given it to the poor? Now we know his attitude was wrong, but he said that because Jesus had probably said a great deal about looking after the poor. When the disciples and Paul were arguing about circumcision and some of these areas in the New Testament, the one thing they agreed on, and it says it in Galatians, they agreed on was we mustn't forget the poor. As a church, I believe fundamental to our blessing and to our future, now we're relatively new here, but we haven't been here a year yet, is that God will help us bless the poor. We're a middle class, reasonably well off church. But the bottom line is, and that's why we can do things like the house, but in the end, if we could just go outside of ourselves and see if we couldn't persuade a few friends or colleagues or family or relations that we know, look, we have this tremendous work, we want to get involved, we want to start this school. I would really ask you to think about that and pray about that. We would ask you together to do that. And Peter's going to be approaching you about this and we'll try to get serve you as best we can so that you can make this possible. Okay, this is, you know, we're a small church, but we have a massive influence in Zambia. And it works like that sometimes, and it will increase. This may be just the beginnings of what we can do, but what you sow is what you reap. As we reach out and God sees us doing that, you know, if you're faithful in something small, God makes you faithful in much. If we're faithful with this school and we'll do it, we have to sort of do something. And I want to really encourage you this morning to do something. And not that you should be taking money out of your own pocket, but that you could take a bit of time to try and persuade someone to take a little bit out of their pocket, 75 pence a day, and help, you know, and help these people in Africa. You know, I also rarely talk to you about money, even over the years previous to here. I always believe God will meet our needs, and on the whole, God has always done that. Just every so often, though, we say, fine, we need to do something that's really special. To take 50 children off the streets of Zolwezi and put them into a school and educate them, you have no idea what the long-term benefits of doing that can be. So I'd really ask you to think about it and to take note of what we shared this morning. Just remember this scripture, Psalm 41, the Lord will strengthen him on his bed of illness. Blessed is he who considers the poor. And then think what God will do for us if we consider the poor. So let's not think the problem's too big. Let's not just sit on our hands. Let's not just let it drift away or leave it for someone else. It's not our responsibility. But everybody here this morning, and to communicate that around to the rest of the church who are not here, we will do that, is to say to them, look, we really want to make this. What a brilliant thing it will be if we can set this school up in January. And on the whole, it's funded from outside of ourselves. Because that also brings people, you know, when people give to the poor who are not Christians, it still blesses them. You know, whatever you do that's good, God sees it, regardless of whether you're a Christian or not. If we encourage people to do something good like this, it will help them, which is good news for them, isn't it? Let's pray. Father, we just thank you for this morning. It's a longish morning, but we thank you for all that's been presented to us. And we pray, Lord, that we won't let this sort of just roll off us like water off a duck's back, but we'll have, we move by it and challenged by it and say, Lord, we really want to do something. We're not asking to take money out of our own pockets, Father, but I pray you would help us to think about those that might help us, those that we know, friends that might want to do it. And when we give them the information properly, when they can see that it's viable, it's a proper, well-organized situation, that, Lord, the money's not being wasted or misused. It's really going to where it counts and where it matters. And that, Lord, as we can show this and demonstrate it, people will be moved to share a little of their income with us so that we can help these children in this school and make an enormous difference to their lives. Our Father, we just pray for every one of those children, Lord, that have been identified with us, that we would bless them, look after them, keep them healthy. But Lord, you would help us to do what needs to be done to ultimately educate them and give them the opportunity for a better life that education will bring them. And Father, we just pray now this in the name of Jesus. Amen. I really want to say thank you to Dave and Richard for the enormous amount of work they've done on this. I must have taken a lot of time doing all of that for this morning, but they know it's really worthwhile. And the best way that we can serve them and bless them in all this work over Africa is to respond positively to the sponsorship that we need you to look into. Okay, have a really good day. It's lunch today, so you don't have to rush off. We're here for the day, so just have a good time. Thank you.